Then all of a sudden, come February 2006, a crash happens, and a lot of people lost trust, lost money, a lot of money in the market, and then they started looking for other things. So the ecosystem was not there. So we wanted to build or help build the ecosystem. One of the building blocks within the ecosystem was the availability of capital. And it's not just capital, it's smart capital that is done by professional asset managers. So that was the missing block within the ecosystem. That was the reason why Jeddah was started.
We talk a lot about venture capital these days. It feels sexier, you know, it's moving faster, it's more flashy. How do you feel about the private equity market today?
It's not as flashy, but there's so much potential and market size for private market versus for private equity versus venture. I think there has been a lot of improvement, a lot of development on the venture side, not so much on the private equity side.
What do you think is causing that? Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Majlis, brought to you in collaboration with Arab News. My name is Ismail Khwaitar, and with me today, I have Adil Atik. Adil, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Adil is the co-founder and CEO of Awaid, a digital wealth management platform. He is also the former founding CEO of Jeddah Fund of Funds, and he was an SVP at Riyad Capital prior to that, as well as the founder of the first real estate investment trust in Saudi. So super excited to have him here with us today to talk all things investment and then fintech, going from corporate traditional banking to entrepreneurship, and all the lessons learned in between. I think it's best to start at the beginning, and that would be the first real estate investment trust. So talk us through what a real estate investment trust is, why you decided to build one in Saudi, how you went about that.
Sure. If you allow me, can I start from something earlier than
Even
that?
Better.
Because,
Even better.
Because I want to lead to why we started REITs in Saudi. So I was involved in managing public equity funds. And as you know, public equity, Saudi public equity fund or equity markets went into a boom and a bust back in the days into 2005 and 2006. After the crash of the market, of the local market in 2006.
Can you tell us a little bit about how the crash happened?
Yes. before that, market was booming. A lot of Saudis were participating in the Saudi markets, but then all of a sudden, come February 2006, a crash happens, and a lot of people lost trust, lost money, a lot of money in the market, and then they started looking for other things. So and they started deserting the local markets, and we were managing that, and so our business was predominantly about managing public equities. So in 2006, the market crash. In 2007, we had a bit of recovery. Then come 2008, the financial credit crisis. Then it was not just the Saudi markets, but the whole global markets crash. So now we have a global crash and a local crash. So at that point of time, our business was suffering, because we were managing public equities only. So I started thinking back in 2008 about doing something else. And at that time, most of the financial companies, the capital in Saudis, were, as I said, they were not much involved in real estate. Real estate was done by a real estate developer. The banks were doing financial securities. So, but if you look at outside of Saudi, real estate was also done by investment managers like us. So I thought maybe there's something we could do. So we started looking at real estate, started reading a lot about real estate, because I don't have a real estate experience. And then started talking to real estate developers. At the time, a lot of people were saying, leave the real estate, just do whatever you do right. real estate is not yours. Even from within the banks, not from even from the senior manager to where we were thinking or bringing this idea of doing a real estate fund. Mm. A lot of people did not believe in that we could do a real estate fund. But we started, as I said, looking at real estate and real estate investment. We started doing real estate development fund. And at a certain point of time, we've discovered that not everybody wants to take the risk. A lot of real estate investors invest in real estate for the income, for the yield. And there was no single product in the market that provided yield and cash for real estate investors. Hmm. And that's why we thought about doing the first REIT in Saudi.
It's a little bit ironic how you were focused on real estate when the 2008 crisis happened. Yes. Because of that.
Exactly.
Interesting. Okay. And how did that play out? Was the market eager to accept it? Did it take a bit of a learning curve for people to come around to understanding it?
To be honest with you, it didn't. The market was ready. The appetite was there. The product was not there. So when we did the first REIT in Saudi back in 2016, 17 REITs came after us within a couple of years.
Wow, okay.
And then we had an industry.
Okay, so it launched in 2016 after quite...
Yes, because it took us some time.
Yes.
it took us some time to do real estate development funds and understand the markets. And so it took us some time to launch the first REIT in 2016.
And after accomplishing that, you moved on to become SVP at Riyad Capital. How did your role evolve in that?
So, I've done a lot of things within Riyad Capital. So, as I said, it was managing traditional asset classes like public equity and fixed income. Then started doing alternative investment, which one of them was real estate. But we also did another thing. We wanted to do private markets, and we looked at specifically venture. Hmm. So we also, at the same time, we also launched the first venture fund, first VC fund in Saudi. And we started, that's another story. Yeah. We started talking about the fund back in 2012. We only launched in 2016. It took us 4 years to convince investors and to fundraise for our first VC fund, because a lot of investors did not believe that there will be startups coming out of Saudi.
Sure. If you're talking in 2012, that's a reasonable assumption.
Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting. And so I guess it almost coincided with the vision, even though you guys were 2 or 3 years ahead of that in 2015, 2016.
Correct.
And then people became a lot more eager as the regulatory support for that improved.
Correct. So we're looking at it today. I think we wanted to do new things. So we were entrepreneur within a large organization. Mm. So within Riyad Bank, we did a lot of new things. So we started the REITs, we started the VC fund. And that led me eventually to entrepreneurship and being an entrepreneur myself.
Well, we'll get there.
Sure.
But then you had one more interesting journey where you got tapped by PIF to found effectively and head Jeddah, the fund of funds.
Correct.
So what is a fund of funds, first of all, and why did PIF feel the need to create it? What was the mandate there?
Sure. So when we did the first fund, the Riyad Taqniya Fund, it was called RTF, it was a success. As I said, we launched in 2016. We started investing in tech startups in Saudi, and we helped start a movement, I would say. Then come the vision, and PIF wanted to help this industry of venture capital and private equity. And they said, since you did the first fund, why don't you come and help us do multiple funds? And, so that's why I joined Jeddah Fund of Fund. Jeddah Fund of Fund was established to help catalyze the private equity and venture capital industry in Saudi. Startups in Saudi needed a lot of support. So the ecosystem was not there. So we wanted to build or help build the ecosystem. One of the building blocks within the The ecosystem was the availability of capital. And it's not just capital. It's smart capital that is done by professional asset managers. So that was the missing block within the ecosystem. That was the reason why Jeddah was started, is to help anchor VC and private equity funds. Those funds will help anchor and help and support with capital and strategy and operation support to entrepreneurs, so those right. entrepreneurs can succeed.
Because I mean, if you're talking in 2019, who before this was investing in VC funds? You mentioned it was hard to get the institutional support for it in the first place. So
correct.
That correct. Made it necessary.
Correct. Because at that point of time, if you looked at the Saudi versus just within MENA, let alone global, Saudi was number five maybe. Which is not in line with the size of the economy.
Yes.
It's not definitely in line with the vision. So the natural place for Saudi is to be number one. Mm-hmm. Thank God today it is number one, with the help of Jeddah and other players within the ecosystem.
And how, I mean, I'm sure setting up Jeddah wasn't without its challenges, especially because you guys were operating primarily during COVID in the early days.
Correct.
What was it like to set up the fund then?
That was a challenging and exciting period. We launched in 2019. It coincided with COVID. So I had to build the company within COVID restrictions. So we hired the whole team within COVID. Most of the team I haven't met face to face until after a year. So we had a mission of not just building the company, but also start investing, because the ecosystem needed us at the time.
So you were doing direct as well as indirect?
No, investing in funds. But we did not have the luxury of time to build the company and this, and then invest. No, we did it at the same time.
Okay.
And then that's why I think the impact was clear within a short period of time, which is like 3 years or so.
Do you feel that you were able to accomplish the mandate within that time period? I mean, it certainly did catalyze the industry, and the industry, I think, did a lot of work of, you know, speeding itself along as well. Do you think that there's still room for growth or improvement there? How do you see that now?
Absolutely. When we did, when we started, we had a set of KPIs to achieve. And fortunately, I had a great team at Jeddah that I was able to assemble. So we've achieved the 5 years KPI within 3 years. It tells you that the industry is ready. The potential is higher than even what we thought. Mm-hmm. I think we're just scratching the surface. The private market evolution is still at its early stage. I think there is huge potential for the growth.
We talk a lot about venture capital these days. It feels sexier. You know, it's moving faster. It's more flashy. How do you feel about the private equity market today?
It's not as flashy, but there's so much potential and market size for private market versus for private equity versus venture. I think there has been a lot of improvement, a lot of development on the venture side, not so much on the private equity side.
What do you think is causing that?
So private equity needs bigger capital, needs different skill sets, and it's a lot of the investors don't believe in blind pool. They believe in single assets. Single assets are not, they do not, you will not develop the private equity industry by doing single assets. If you do single assets, you're only selecting an investment, but you're not really helping a company grow through different phases, or as any private equity, or help a distressed company come out of this distress or help a company grow, it needs different skill set that is it takes time to develop.
Right. I mean, even when we look at venture capital today, I think there's people are still learning that venture capital needs to go beyond just financial support. Even in the early stages, you need to help them build governance, develop best practices in terms of running a company, and private equity is that times a thousand.
Time so it takes time.
Do you think this is a talent issue, a lack of experience within the region issue, all the above?
It is definitely a lack of talent and an experience. But I think that kind of experience usually do not come from the financial service industry, which we come from. Mm-hmm. It comes from expert matters or industry expert matters. So if you're managing an aviation fund, you need people who have aviation experience. Mm-hmm. It's not just most other funds, if you look at public equity, fixed income, probably some real estate. Most of the people who are running those funds or managing are like me, mm-hmm. or financial, who have financial service experience or financial. You don't need that in a private equity. You need people with experience in their own respective industry. And that is today, that's not there yet.
Right. And you need to get your hands dirty. It's a longer time frame.
Absolutely.
So you have experience now, you know, so far in this story of being sort of entrepreneurial, but within definitely institutional corporate settings.
Correct.
And then I don't think a lot of people would have predicted that your next move would be to become the co-founder of a digital wealth management platform that's, you know, very new, very revolutionary for Saudi.
Sure.
So talk us through how you made that decision.
As I said, I've been an entrepreneur within a large organization, so it runs in me. Entrepreneurship is part of me. I've always wanted to do something on my own, to have the freedom to do creative things out of the boundaries of a large organization. With the experience that I've had within the investment world, I think I had the experience and the desire to do something different. Mm-hmm. I think what also helped make that decision is my experience or my stay at Jeddah. I was involved in helping entrepreneurs, helping funds. And so I saw a gap in the market. I think most of startups in Saudis they're run by young tech individuals.
Sure.
Not a lot of startups in Saudi are run by gray hair individuals
seasoned
like me.
Professionals.
I think that experience would help a lot startups in scaling. Mm. I think you can start a startup. I think it's the scale up is the challenge. Most of the challenge in the scale.
I've heard this a lot of the founder is the right person for the 0 to 1, but then the 1 to 10 they can't crack.
They can't scale because they don't have the financial expertise to scale. And I think that's what I saw a gap in the digital financial or wealth tech space that I thought I could help fill, but with help of other co-founders and other team members who have the tech side. So that and this is what I had at Awaed. I came with the financial expertise, but my other co-founders are all tech. So I think that combination is a great combination. I think that's why we think we can. We can do a lot of good things.
But even taking a step back, why? Sure, you wanted to become an entrepreneur. Why Awaed?
Okay, Awaed is.
Explaining what Awaed is first.
Okay, let's explain what Awaed is. So Awaed is a digital investment platforms. What that means is, think of the capital side, but also think of the too many fintechs. today that is that are happening. If you look at the compare or between the capital side, the banks affiliate capitals, and also the fintechs, you would find that the capitals have lots of services or investment services. They have comprehensive products, mm-hmm. but they're catered to high net worth individuals and institutions. You look at fintechs, who are usually single product fintechs, they cater to retail, but they also do it, they only do it on a single products. Mm-hmm. What we wanted to do at Awaid is to have the best of the two worlds. So we have an institution with a license to do all kind of products, but focus on retail clients. Today, retail clients are neglected by most of the financial institutions.
Proposition there, because if you tell someone, if you ask, is Saudi underbanked? It is not underbanked. Most people have a lot of bank accounts.
Correct.
Are they underserved, underserviced?
Yes.
Yes.
They are underserved. And they are underserved because, as I said, the existing players are focusing on institution and high net worth clients. Yeah. Not because they don't have a desire to service the retail clients. It's because they can't.
They don't know how.
They don't know how
to reach them.
And that is what a technology company like Awaid can.
Mm-hmm. And there's a point that you raised when we talked previously about sort of this, of it's an issue of access, not knowledge. So yes. What a lot of people will say is Saudis don't invest today because they don't know that they should be investing. They don't know how to do it. What you're saying is they're ready and they want to do it. They just haven't been given the right tools.
Correct. So, yes, absolutely correct. A lot of people who say we need to educate the market. Retail market individuals don't invest because they're not, they don't have the awareness or education. I disagree. I think we have the Saudi individuals are mostly financially literate than average. Mm-hmm. They're tech savvy. Their income level are higher. So if you look at all of these factors, they bode well for a higher investing population. But we don't. I think it's all about access. Today, most people consume what they have and what they will have in the future. It's all because of consumption is easy. Mm. It's within your phone. You can do a lot of things. Even if you don't have the money, you can borrow. I think investing is the same. If investing is available and accessible, and it's not just available, it's accessible with ease and with an entertaining and enjoying experience, mm-hmm. similar to the consumption experience that we have today, I think a lot of people will invest as much as they consume. Today is, we do shop all the time, we order foods, we consume all the time because the experience is easy and entertaining. We don't invest as much because you need to go to the bank. You need to go to the investment company. You need to fill a lot of papers. When you go online, you are faced with a lot of financial jargons that people don't understand.
So it's counterintuitive with what a strong digital infrastructure the Saudi government has for the financial services to then be so backwards almost.
Correct, absolutely. And back to Awaid, we think we can do that because we are not just a technology company, but we are a mobile-first company. Mm. We think of retail client and only retail client. And we think of mobile and only mobile. That's why we've been able to, for example, revolutionize the onboarding process. Now you can invest in a stock in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
open an account, fill your KYC, fund your account, and then buy a stock all within 3 minutes. That is unheard of. And this is exactly suitable to the retail clients that we're targeting.
Short attention span, almost gamified form of investing.
Exactly.
It's exciting. It's super. And it's what you need in the 21st century to invest.
Absolutely.
I think it democratizes investment in a way that, you know, what, as you said, the traditional banks are going for the big whales. They're not necessarily targeting the person who has, let's say, 10,000 riyals to invest, or even less.
Correct. And if you look at, and this is, we did not invent this. It's everywhere else. I mean, the US, for example, has always been known as a country of low saving rates. That's it's changing big time. And if you look at the portion or the ratio of adults investing in the market, it's been going up year after year. It has reached 65% of adults are investing in the US market, stock market. In Saudi, although people say Saudis do invest and a lot of retail investors are, we're still at 40 something. So there is a lot of room.
40 is still higher than I thought it would be, but definitely room to grow there.
Yeah, there's room to grow.
And for people to mature into that as well. Mm-hmm. When you look at your career and, you know, your background in Riyad Capital and Jeddah and now Awaid, how do you think about leadership and running a company? What are the different lessons you've learned over the course of the years, and how do you apply them in these different institutions?
So personality do not change. It's probably the same me in different organizations. I've always worked within teams, and I'm proud of the teams that I've worked within Riyadh, within Jeddah, and now within Awaid. They're the one who made it happen. So it's all about enabling your coworker and your team, believing in them, giving them the opportunity to learn and do new things. And it's not that I don't have strong opinions. I do have strong opinions, but I do allow others to to learn, to make their own voice heard. And then we come to the right resolutions.
Very diplomatic. And when we talk about challenges, I know you mentioned, you know, forming a team during COVID. I'm sure a startup has its own challenges. What are ones you faced here?
So Jeddah helped me do a startup. Although Jeddah is not, it's a PIF startup. So it's a bit different than the startup that we're running today, but it's the same challenges that you have with every startup. Talent acquisition is not always a challenge. Defining the market, pushing the boundaries about the market that you're addressing. Because that's what helps you scale. It's, as I said, scale up is the name of the game. So how do you scale up is by finding the right product fit, but also by expanding your market opportunity. So even if you hit success with a product, that will give you a certain level of scale. But in order to continue to scale, you need to expand beyond that product, beyond that market. So this is the sort of challenge that we have.
Interesting.
We're facing every day.
When you look at the product market fit, the advice that you get traditionally from startups and VCs is do not create a product and then try to fit it into the market. Look for problems in the market. So how does that apply to thinking about expansion of the product?
So When we, as I said from the beginning, Awaid is not about a single product. So it's about multi-investing, multi-trading. Mm-hmm. So the problem we're solving is democratizing all type of investing for clients. So it's not just democratizing trading. It's democratizing investing in funds. It's democratizing investing in time deposits. It's democratizing investing in gold. So that's how you can expand your market without losing focus. So it's the same target. It's the same market. It's the same segments of the market that you're doing, but it's about solving different problems within that segment.
And as someone who's been a fund and is now a fundraiser as well, what advice do you have for funds looking for startups to invest in and startups looking to raise funds?
It's all about people. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we are in the people business. So you need to look at the team, the people who are behind the company. You need to look at their experience, and you need to look at their aspiration, what they're looking. You need to look at the problem they're solving, their understanding of the problem and the market and the competitor. And and it's not about disruption. Disruption is part of the game. It's not the whole name. Hmm. It's not the whole game. Awad today, for example, Awad, yes, is a disruptor, but we're actually changing the rule of the game. We're actually making the market bigger, not just taking market share from existing players.
Yeah.
So that kind of understanding from an entrepreneur of the market and the problem that they're solving, I think that's what you look for when you look for
That makes a lot of sense. So you're not just taking market share away from the incumbents. You're creating a market that wouldn't otherwise exist without your product.
Yeah, because it's all about defensibility. Mm-hmm. Today, you've done that. Someone else will do it. Also, maybe at a better technology or a cheaper way. So what happened? You've disrupted the market and then you get disrupted. That's how you need to think about beyond disruption.
Okay, then looking beyond disruption, looking at the Saudi banking investment sector as a whole, how have you seen the evolution of that throughout your career? And then what do you have your eye on now? What do you think is hot?
Sure, we're very fortunate that we operate in an industry that is growing, but that growth comes with a side effects, with a negative side effects. Negative for the market, probably positive for us. So most companies within our industry are profitable. But that profitability makes them complacent. So it's easy to make money in our industry. The markets are there. The margins are there. So today there are 192 companies that are licensed by CMA. Mm-hmm. Probably all of them are profitable, or most majority of them. It tells you that the market is hungry. There's so much to do. But because of that, creativity is not at its best. Mm-hmm. So when you see most companies do similar products like others, product creation and innovation is not at its best. And I come from that industry, and I'm part of that industry, so I'm one of the people to blame. But I think this creates opportunity for us at Awad. We're hungry. We want to make a big change. We want to make a big impact in the industry. So we want to do, we're a startup, we don't, we have a high target to achieve, which at least frees us from the complacency that the existing players have.
Right, because you operate on a zero commission model, so you're betting big on volume.
We're betting big on volume. We're not... I could have been profitable year one, but then my size or market size mm-hmm. is this. Because I'm betting on volume, I'm letting go of commission and profitability. So we have a longer term vision or mm-hmm. an appetite to take risk and do new things and be creative. And I think that's the challenging or the exciting things about Awaed.
When you mentioned that there are a couple of people who are copying existing models, this is something I also wanted to ask you about is for the past couple of years, you know, the first sort of wave of startups in Saudi were grabbing the low-hanging easy fruit, which was copying existing models outside. So we didn't have an Uber here. We didn't have food delivery here. And that was done here and that was easily scaled. Now we're growing, maturing to the point where, okay, there aren't as many easily copyable global models, and we're really going to have to start looking for region-specific problems. What do you think the next wave of startups will look like here?
I think here you've explained it well. And speaking of Awaed, a lot of people think of us as copying Robinhood. And we're not shy about we want to build the Robinhood of Saudi Arabia. But we're not copying Robinhood. What did Robinhood do? Robinhood, they, as you said, democratized trading in the U.S. And they brought a lot of new individuals who never invested in the market. That side we want to copy. But we're not copying their products. We're not copying. They're focused only on trading. We're not only trading. We have lots of other products. So, and that's not because we don't want to just copy Robinhood, because we understand the market and we know that what fits in Saudi is different than what's suitable in the US. And I think that's kind of startup that now needs to come I need to see more of, where you might be copying a business model, you might be copying solving the similar problem, but the solution is different.
Yeah.
So fitting it to the Saudi markets. But in order for you to do that, you need to really understand the market. And hence, back to people with experience and expertise about coming from the industry, to understand the market, to understand the problems and the problem to be solved.
Yes, it is a very unique market. I mean, one thing we talked about is people being overbanked, underserved. The other interesting aspect, of course, is the stress on Sharia compliance. So how do you tackle that, or how do you view that?
We are a Sharia compliant company. We're targeting retail clients. Retail clients' appetite for Sharia compliant is very high. But Sharia compliant is not just about Sharia, investing in Sharia. It's about also the knowledge about Sharia. And that's why we at Awaed, we were the first platform in Saudi to provide Sharia screening within the same experience, embedded in the trading experience. So before Awaed, if somebody wanted to trade in a stock, he would go and check with a list of different scholars, or ask someone, or get into a platform to ask for if this company is Sharia or not. We have changed that. We understand that our investors wants to do it at ease, want to do it right away. Their attention span is
regrettably
limited,
short.
So they want to do it all at the same time, and the same place. That's why we embedded Sharia within our app. So today, when you log in our app and go into stock page, whether in Saudi or US, every stock that you want to invest in, before you invest in, you would know if it's Sharia compliant, if it's not. And if it's not Sharia compliant, what's the purification rate that you wanted that you need to do to make it Sharia compliant? So all the information right at your
See, that's really interesting, and that's a very region specific fit you
exactly.
have to create.
Yes.
Which I don't. know if it's impossible, but definitely hard for a foreign company coming in to recreate.
True.
But at the same time, is that something that's necessarily an exportable quality to other markets?
Absolutely. It's we're using technology to do it, so anybody can do it. It's a simple API.
And finally, I think just to wrap up the view on your journey to today, very long career. I'm sure you've learned a lot from it. What is one thing that you would perhaps do differently that you've learned later on that you would have wanted to apply early?
I would probably have been entrepreneur
earlier,
way earlier. I spend a lot of time within.
What do you think kept you from that?
It's just destiny and fate. It came at the right time.
I mean, the timing is everything, I feel, in the kingdom and within the startup world as well. So you can't be too early to the market.
I would have been too early.
Yeah.
Like we did a lot of things too early.
Mm.
So I think I'm the right time. At the right time. Personally speaking, I'm talking about, I probably would have had the desire to do it early.
Mm.
But maybe I would have not have been able to succeed if I had done it early.
Of course. And looking back again, we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of Arab News, so we're asking people to look within 50-year time zones, which for a startup is a very long time period. But right. If you look at the past 50 years in Saudi, for example, what is a notable achievement that you see that has really shaped Saudi today?
So I was born in the 70s. So 70s were the first or the big economic boom of Saudi, Tafra. I was young, so I did not experience it fully, but I lived through the end of it, and I lived through the aftermath of the economic boom. And I've also lived through the second economic boom led by His Royal Highness through the Vision 2030. Between these two times, a lot has happened. And I was fortunate enough to have experienced a lot of economic events that happened, be it the boom of the Saudi capital markets, the local markets, the Tadawul, the bust of the capital market, the financial crisis, the evolution of the real estate industry, the evolution of the VC industry. And I was very fortunate to have participated in many of these events. I think today we're the transformation that Saudi is going through is probably a once in a lifetime opportunity. Very seldom someone lives through big economic shifts in their career, or let alone or life, let alone career. I think I'm fortunate to have lived as I said, through the aftermath of the first economic boom, but I'm very fortunate to have to be going through the second economic boom. I think all what we're doing today, whether at Awaed or at other places, that is trying to fit and trying to not just benefit from the transformation of the economy, the economy that is happening, but also play a role in shaping the vision and the transformation of the economy. I think the potential is huge. I'm happy to be part of it.
Well said. And we're happy that you're a part of it and driving the change
thank
with
you.
Us. So thank you so much, Adil, for your time today.
Thank you, Yasmin. Appreciate it.